Hi, and welcome to episode 79 of Fresh Out of Tokens, our final episode of 2016. We have made it a year and a half, almost 80 episodes. If not for all my travel, we'd be past that number. So welcome everyone who is listening. Happy holidays if you celebrate such things. If you don't celebrate such things, hope you have a chill end of the year, that you had a good Christmas by the time you hear this episode, or whatever you may celebrate. Back with me is David. Hi, David. How are you?
Yeah, it's great to be back. December is hectic as hell. It's crazy, but we have just the best guest.
We do.
To end the year with. It's great.
I'm feeling very honored by this setup. I'm like, oh, yay!
Well, we've been talking about getting you on forever, and that was totally my fault. So I'm like, we should get you on the show, and then I forgot to email you or tweet you. So
every time you mentioned it, I was like, yes, I am totally up for this. I will come on the second you give me like a day. I'll be there. And you just never invited me. I assumed that I was just that low on your priority list.
No.
Like, oh, don't want this guest there. They're not a great guest.
No, you are a lovely guest, and it's my fault because I was not home most of November.
No, I know that feeling well.
But the lovely dulcet tones that you hear are Laura Kate Dale, also known as Laura K Buzz on the internet. So hi, Laura.
Hello. How are you both doing?
Cold. It is cold in Chicago.
Oh, yay. The wonders of winter setting in.
It is also cold in Oregon.
It is also cold here in England, so hooray.
We're all cold and crabby. It works out. So before we get into questions for you, I want to just get our usual intro out of the way in case someone is listening to us for the first time or the 79th time. Who knows? If you've stuck with us all 79 episodes, please let us know so we can thank you with a mug or something for someone who has listened to every single episode of this show. But for those listening, we have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks, who designed our logo and header. We also have a blog to complement the show, which is outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, episode, or guest feedback, but like to be a guest, drop us a note at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter for news about episodes, guests, and other shenanigans. And that is Out of Tokens Cast. Musical accompaniment is provided by Mike Moody, and you can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And with all of that out of the way, I would love to welcome you, Laura. And, you know, I'm familiar with your work. David's familiar with your work. But for those listening who may not know who you are and what you do, give us the, not the elevator pitch, that's too short, but, you know, who are you and what do you do?
Who am I and what do I do? So my name's Laura. I write about video games on the internet. And that is a very broad term because sometimes it means like, oh, I'll talk to Peter Molyneux and get him to cry a little bit and talk about how he's never going to talk to the press again. Sometimes it's me reviewing butts because apparently people like butt reviews. And just sort of anything in between. It's like, here's a bit of serious, here's a bit of silly. Let's mash them together and hope that that makes something that people like. So lots of video games and lots of butts.
Wow. And it all fit in an elevator pitch allocated time. That's amazing.
Yeah, I tried to keep my brand nice and concise. I'm like, I don't know what to do other than that. I'm just like, nah, here's the sales pitch. You got it. That's who I am. Go.
I need to take your example.
It's true. It's like 90 seconds or less, right, for an elevator pitch?
Something like that.
I think that's what they told me.
If I had to, I could probably get it down to like the, how many words? 3 or 4 words, get it down to just video games and butts.
There you go. That's your new business card.
There's a nice concise brand right there.
So we also like to ask, what is your like video game origin story? How did you get into gaming? Which is something I don't know, despite having heard so many of your podcasts.
I think I've talked about it once or twice, but the way I got into games was that I grew up with an older brother called Andrew who had a lot of Nintendo consoles before I did. And when I was sort of maybe 5 years old or so, from up to the age of about 8, he would give me his hand-me-down consoles that he wasn't using anymore. So my first system was, I think, a Super Nintendo with Mario Paint. and basically I ended up inheriting from my older brother Mario Paint on the Super Nintendo, which then went to Zelda on the Super Nintendo, and that's where I was like, oh, goodness, video games, I like these. I like all these wonderful, weird and magical, you know, worlds and adventures I can go on. I think the first time that I really, like, realized video games were, like, a big thing for me, I was not a sociable kid in the slightest. I was very socially isolated, not very good at the whole talking to people thing. And I ended up getting a Game Boy with Pokemon Red pretty early on after that released. And just as Pokemon was becoming a big thing, my brain being very good at remembering, like, numbers and stats and figures meant that I became a bit of a go-to person for, like, hey, Laura knows about Pokemon. She knows what level a Bulbasaur's going to evolve at. Let's actually have conversations with her. And I was like, oh, talking about video games is a nice gateway to having conversations with people with similar interests. And thus my life in video games was born, I suppose.
Very cool. you not just did that, you parlayed that into a career, which a lot of us would like to do or try to do. And you've written for quite a lot of sites, and now you started Let's Play Video Games. And one thing I want to note, because I saw this tweet going around, and I don't follow the person, but I saw you tweet it, that people often, you know, treat you as like kind of the EIC, the head of Let's Play Video Games, and then Joe and Vicky are contributors, but all of you are equal partners.
Oh, yeah, we started the place together. It is like, it is our baby as a collective group, I think. But it's a weird, awkward situation in that because I get mentioned a lot in other places because I do a lot of leak stuff on Let's Play Video Games. Mm-hmm. Occasionally people will be like, oh yeah, Laura, she's the one in charge. I'm like, no, we have a nice little democratic thing going on. It's all good. You know, remember them. They do cool stuff too.
Yeah, and you know, and I wanted to make sure to do that because I know that happens a lot with this show. So you know, David exists.
Yeah,
he's here. We haven't forgotten about him. But
you
I saw
are
that tweet
much
and I
more
thought
impressive.
About it.
You have done so much this year.
I've done too much this year. I'm looking forward to sleeping.
I've mostly spent the year like fighting with the government about healthcare.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right.
Are we fighting over the question? Is it the end of your fight?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, it could be a really, really epic battle for the last episode of the year.
It's like, don't fight over me, people. You can both ask me if you want. It's fine.
Come on, Laura. That would be like the most epic battle of you being a guest on a podcast where we start fighting over questions to ask you. you know, it'd be hilarious.
It would, but I'm sure one of you can ask me.
Okay. But you know, after clarifying the whole, you know, everyone's an equal partner, let's play video games. I was wondering, you know, like how you made that leap from just talking about games with people and finding a common interest to actually making a career out of it.
Yeah. So talking about video games was never a thing growing up that like I thought of as a job or thought about the fact that someone obviously had to do that for work. I think the first time I really realized that is around the time that the Wii was being teased initially and it was called the Revolution, I think. I listened to a lot of IGN's Nintendo podcasts that were going on at the time, and that's where I started to realize like, oh, there are people out there who their job is to talk about video games, and that's a thing that they do for a living. From there, I left school with nothing in the way of qualifications. English, I failed my basic GCSE exams, which are like your first set of exams at school. I was not good at English. I had big issues with spelling, grammar, everything on that course, and I just kind of went and did a bit of a mindless supermarket job for a few years. And that was a really mind-numbing job to do. It gave me nothing creative to do, and I started just coming up with article ideas on a little notebook next to myself in the supermarket just because it was just something to keep me thinking. And that slowly progressed from like, oh, I guess I should write the articles that I've written, I've had ideas about, to going into unpaid work, to trying to pitch for freelance, and I got a few freelance pieces, and then suddenly, about 2 years ago, out of nowhere, I had everything blow up at once, where Jim Sterling invited me to podcast with him, which got me in front of a lot of people. I launched a Patreon, which jumped to doing just enough to cover my bills, and yeah, I ended up going from there to, like, Patreon, Destructoid editor, freelancing for a bunch of places, and then when I unfortunately had to leave Destructoid, I basically took the Destructoid UK team with me, and we made our own place, and it's all fun and cool now.
Oh, that's really cool.
That's the way to do it. If you're leaving, just clear the office.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you people were good and you work well with me. Right, we're doing our own thing. Off we go.
So, yeah, since you've been doing this a while, though, do you have any thoughts on how coverage of games has changed over the years, particularly the last few years, I would imagine?
Yeah, over the last few years, I think the big changes have been in regards to the importance of personality when it comes to criticism and coverage of games. Like, the big obvious place where that happened is the huge growth of YouTube as a place for criticism, discussion, and coverage of games. But more so than that, you had, like, a rise of podcasts becoming a bigger thing than they were previously. You see a lot more outlets now that will have a less strict editorial tone on their written work and will allow more of the author's personality through. Just because there seems to be this idea that if you put some of the personality of your writer out there, it increases the trust in the opinions that are being expressed. And for me, that's been a really nice thing to see, in that as a writer, it frees me up a lot to be a bit silly and creative with the way I talk about games, in a way that probably wouldn't have been possible a decade ago in the era of, like, print media being the big thing for games criticism. I think that's the big thing, is just that the personality and the person who is writing about games has become as much a part of gaming discussion as the criticism or discussion itself, which is not necessarily a good thing in every regard. It makes critics have to put a lot more of themselves out there sometimes, but it creates more of a perceived bond between, like, oh, okay, I can trust your opinions on a game because I know what this writer's like, I know the kind of games they generally like, I can see how our opinions are probably going to line up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The informal nature of it, I see how that could be appealing to people in other areas of, like, writing.
Definitely. There is something nice about having flexibility with the way that you approach a topic, and that can, it still leaves room for that sort of more serious discussion, but it also means sometimes, like, hey, if you want to talk about the fact that a video game character got confirmed gay, you can flip some pronouns in an existing meme and make an article that's like, here's a big meme that we made relevant to this news story. Like, it's silly stuff like that that has grown in frequency that I'm like, yeah, there is some nice flexibility and creativity in games media right now. Yeah.
True. And I was just thinking about what you said about, you know, the kind of danger of opinion out there and people taking your opinion and kind of running with it.
Mm.
Because, and this isn't about games, but I was talking a bit about Rogue One, and someone, you know, they were trying to be funny, but as we know, humor does not translate into text.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, I trust the opinion of other people more than myself. And I'm like, oh my God, please don't do that. That makes me so uncomfortable. And they're like, well, I was joking. And I'm like, well, I can't tell that in a text. But there could have been someone, you know, saying that and not trying to make a joke.
Yeah, there are people who don't want to read criticism sometimes because, like, I can understand the fear that, like, oh, if I read about a criticism of a game, I might notice it where I might not have noticed it had I gone into the game blind, which is fine. But, like, your opinion on a piece of media is never wrong. Like, the people who are critics for a living don't have more valid opinions than you. The skill they have is how they put those opinions across and how they verbalize them and how they, you know, put them out there, possibly. But their opinion on a piece of media is no more correct or incorrect than yours. Like the things you like, even if critics, like, if critics think they're terrible and you like them, continue to like them. That's more power to you. If critics love it and you hate it, then don't feel the need to force yourself to like it. It's all good.
Oh, if people could just get to that point and like it, like media, but also think about it critically, I'd be so happy. But then I think we'd both be out of a job.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Well, you know, since we're talking about criticism and thinking about opinions, I was wondering, what's been the highlight of your year for gaming coverage?
Is this specifically in terms of coverage I've done?
Either, whichever okay. you want.
Okay, well, in terms of, like, the highlight of my year in terms of game coverage I've done, I think it's got to be the fact that I got to unbox and review the PS4 Slim model 3 weeks before it came out and 1 week before it was announced, which I believe I was the first person who had both a full written review with a score and an unboxing of that together, which was a weird, surreal moment in that, like, if I told myself in my teens, hey, one day you're going to review a console that hasn't even been announced yet and no one else will have done it, that was a weird and scary, exciting big moment. So, yeah, I think that's the big thing I've done this year that I was like, oh gosh, yeah, I got my hands on a thing and it was real and no one wanted to cover it, so I covered it, and then suddenly everything, it was very busy. It was a big thing.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I remember seeing that and I was like, huh, so it is real.
Yeah. Even when I did it, people didn't believe it was real. There were people who saw me unbox this thing, plug it in, turn it on and use it, and they were like, nah, it's a 3D printed case, you see, and there's a hole in the bottom of the case and a hole in the table, and when she's plugging the HDMI lead in, she's actually plugging it into an extender that runs down under the table to a standard PS4. I'm like, really?
Wow, that's
sounds like so much work.
Yeah, there were conspiracy theories about how I had managed to fake the existence of a console that I had in my hands. Like, there was a... It was kind of amazing. I think a lot of it was just, like, PlayStation fans that didn't want to admit that the PS4 Slim was less powerful than the Xbox One S. And as such, they were like, we don't want to believe it's less powerful than that Xbox that's coming out this year. So we're just going to ignore the existence of it and pretend it's not real. And when it got announced, no one apologized. Everyone was just like, oh, okay. it was real. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, people apologize? Unheard of.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't have, like, a good transition, so I'm just gonna go for it.
Yeah, just jump right in ahead first. It's all good.
Yeah, you went to GamerX4 this year, and you had a great time. I'm assuming I am not you. Would you go back for another queer-focused games convention?
In a heartbeat. I had the sweetest, loveliest time at GamerX. GamerX has a very unique vibe to it in that it is one of the most instantly welcoming, amusing, safe feeling conventions. It's one of the few times that I've been at a convention where the building has had to share itself with something that seems like it would clash with, you know, queer gaming event. We had to share the building with, like, hey, here's a bunch of, like, very excited sports fans. Didn't change the fact that it still felt incredibly... It felt very welcoming, very very relaxed, and I got to have probably more fun than I've had guesting at any convention there. I got to do my stupid panel about video game butts that seemingly went over really well, and it gave me a lot of confidence as well. Like, coming out of GamerX, I started thinking a lot about, like, okay, what queer-focused comedy content can I start preparing for other queer games conventions? There is an event called Nine Worlds in London that's happening in August of 2017, and I'm trying to put together a stand-up comedy set about being trans for that. Like, I'm trying to do, like, hey, that I had a really good time at GamerX. Let's see if I can prepare more, like, silly comedy queer content going forwards, because I really enjoyed getting to do that for that kind of audience. So, yeah, I want to go to more queer-focused game conventions. There needs to be more of them, and it sucks that, like, getting to America for GamerX is such, like, a distance to go.
Wow. I so want to come to MCM and see your set, though.
I've been trying to get myself to write 2 jokes every day, and, like, regardless of the quality, be like, okay, that's 2 new jokes done today, and I can come back and, like, clean it up and find what works and put a set together later. I'm just trying to, like, write 2 jokes about being trans every day, so that's been an interesting challenge the last couple of weeks. Just trying to make myself be creative.
Oh, you're plenty creative.
Oh, thank you.
And speaking of creativity and Gamer X, all of these come back to butts. It always comes back to butts.
Yeah.
Well, you're the resident butt expert, Laura.
Yeah, the quick side story. I accidentally became the gaming butts person. I'm gonna tell you the story of how this happened. This is my origin story. So when I was launching my Patreon, I was trying to get stretch goals to get people to back so that I could, like, make it a full-time thing. And I went on Twitter and I asked, hey, what would you like to see me doing that would get you to, you know, back me on Patreon? And someone, I don't remember who, tweeted and said you should review butts in video games. I retweeted that for a joke. I did not retweet it seriously. And a good 30 or 40 people told me, if you do that, I will back you on Patreon. So I started reviewing butts, and then I realized it's really fun to review butts in a very serious manner. And yeah, that was a complete accident that got me into the world of butt critique.
That's awesome.
Anyway, I realized I derailed. You were going somewhere with butts, but I was just like, no, I have a butt story. We're going to butts.
Well, no, it was a question about butts, so it's actually perfect.
What is your question about butts?
So Tracer is your butt of the year.
Yep. Mm.
So, you know, what was the methodology on narrowing down all of these video game butts to come up with Tracer as the best butt?
Okay, so a lot of people on the internet were initially disappointed with my choice of Tracer for best video game butt of the year 2016. And here's the thing, if you're just going on aesthetic value and you're looking at these butts in a vacuum, not paying attention to the characters they're attached to or what the butt itself says about the character, Tracer is not the best butt of this year. There are butts that say more about the characters that they are. There are butts that are just like, you know, that's a bigger butt, a more toned butt, whatever it is. Tracer's butt is the most relevant butt of this year. It is an aesthetically pleasing butt in general. It is like, you know, it's a nice, tight, proportionate butt that's not too, you know, too tight that it's not going to be comfortable to get a hold on, but not so, like, unwieldy that you can't get a handful, you know, together in your palms. But the important thing is that Tracer has a canon love of butts, which I think is a very important factor not to be understated. She canonically, at points in the Overwatch shorts, will stop and turn around to get a good look of someone's butt before running away. In my mind, her butt is one of aspiration. She is a lover of good butts, and she has given herself a good butt as to not be hypocritical as a butt lover. Also, there is the fact that her butt is the only butt this year of the butts that were sort of in our contention that created enough of a controversial event that the butt became news. There are very few newsworthy butts in any given year, and Tracer was one of the few noteworthy butts in terms of her butt getting notoriety for existing. And lastly, I find her butt fascinating in that the character model for her butt, I did a conversation with Brianna Wu about this, so if you go look up Overwatch Butts with Brianna Wu on youtube.com/LauraKBuzz, we talked about the fact that her character model for her butt doesn't make sense. Her butt crack is too physically impossibly deep that it doesn't work on a human being, and that's how her butt from any angle in game looks like it has a really steep, like, you know, deep curve into the butt crack, is because of the fact that her butt crack just goes impossibly deep so that no matter what lighting effect is on it, it looks shadowed in the center. So I find her butt fascinating on many levels, and that's why Tracer is my best video game butt of the year 2016. I hope that is sufficient explanation.
Oh, it is. I was just like, I never thought about lighting effects because I can't actually play Overwatch because I get very motion sick. But it was just like, huh, That's an interesting thought, because I thought it was her suit that made it look more like kind of a little peach as she runs around.
Yeah, most games would do is they would have a very shallow butt, and then they would basically pre-bake a shader effect onto it. So, like, no matter where the lighting was from, the shadow on the butt would look the same. But hers is dynamic. She just has an impossibly deep butt crack so that the lighting always makes her butt look deep. And it's a fascinating way to do it. They didn't have to make her butt crack impossibly deep. They could have just gone the easy route, but they were like, no. We're going to give her an infinitely deep butt crack.
Wow.
Yeah. Butt facts.
Butt facts with Laura. Goaty butts and butt facts with Laura. There we go. But speaking of Tracer, David has the next question.
Yeah.
Recently, Tracer has been revealed to be canonically queer. Do you think that's a good move for Blizzard, considering a lot of fans saw Tracer as another instance of queer baiting for a while?
I'm really glad that they eventually got around to saying, yeah, she's queer, because for the longest time, people have assumed so because, like, hey, she frequently stops in those shorts to admire female characters, and it's pretty much always the female characters that she's stopping to admire on an aesthetic level. And while I get to some degree their reasoning for waiting to do this, I get the idea that by not talking about this straight away at launch, they avoid the potential downside of people being like, oh, Tracer, she's the gay character in Overwatch. But they were dangerously close to queer baiting. There are numerous series I can point to that do the whole thing where they say, well, there are some queer characters in our canon and we're going to tell you about them eventually. You're just going to have to wait for it. A really good example recently would be the show Ruby, spelt R-W-B-Y, which has been saying pretty much since its inception that there are queer characters in its cast, and years on is still not confirming who they are, which is just frustrating. But I am glad that they did this. I like the fact that it's Tracer, because Tracer is, like, she's the face of this game. She is, I believe, the character on the box, if I remember right. I have a digital copy, but I think her face is plastered on the box. Like, she is the face of this game, and she has been confirmed queer, and that's lovely. And so many headcanons got confirmed as canon this week that I am so very happy. I'm so very happy. I love gay Tracer, and she's going to be one of the video game characters that is eventually dragged into my harem of video game wives. So, you know, we're getting there. Like, let's just get my whole list of video game characters I like confirmed as gay, and I will be happy. But, yeah, I'm glad they got there eventually. It's irritating it took as long as it did, and it's irritating that it's in something that's outside of the main game, but I'm just glad that we have that confirmation.
Yeah. Also, you're right. I just looked it up. She is on the box.
Yeah, which is like, hooray, another game with a queer lady on the box. I like that. Go video games. That is a positive thing that happened.
Who's the other one? Because I'm drawing a total blank.
There are not many video games with queer women on the boxes. Mild spoilers, but Ellie in The Last of Us is queer.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, she's on the box of The Last of Us, you know, that's DLC that talks about that. But, like, there's a couple of examples-ish.
Yeah.
Definitely not many.
I always forget about Ellie because I haven't finished The Last of Us, because there are parts where it was just, like, either jump scares or just, like, I don't want to keep redoing this whole fucking section. I'm going to stop playing this game right now.
I can't blame you. There are times where I want to go back to that game and I will watch, like, there are movie cuts of it on YouTube that I'll sometimes watch.
Yeah, I'll get there eventually. It's on the hard drive taunting me. But, you know, since we already talked about the best butt, it's kind of a natural progression to talk about the best sex game, because I've not seen anyone do this before. And it was just like, yay, you have it. And B, you have a game that I really like, because I really like Christine Love and her work. So I was really excited to see that Lady Killer Nabine is your best sex game. But I was wondering what other games were in the category and what made you choose Lady Killer?
So I guess I'll start with why I chose Lady Killer. Lady Killer in a Bind is not a perfect game by any means. There are some, like, the big... I'm trying to work out how to put this together. So the things I love about it is I love the way that that game looks at non-standard, non-vanilla sex and sort of normalizes a lot of things about it. I like a lot of the ways that it normalizes conversations of consent within non-traditional sexual situations. The thing that I struggle with, and this is a thing that like I talked about in my review, is the fact that there is overall a question about consent that's never answered in that game, which is how does the fact that your primary protagonist is misleading people as to their identity factor into conversations about informed consent? It seems to sidestep those questions by basically... It sidesteps those questions by any time that your identity is discovered, it's hand-waved away as like, oh, well, they didn't, you know, the fact that your genitals were exposed didn't give you away, which I think is really nice from, like, a trans perspective, that having a character who is presenting as a male character have a vagina exposed is not necessarily grounds for them to assume that you are not that character.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is interesting, but I think it sidesteps a big conversation that could have been had about consent dynamics, but that's, you know, that's a whole other thing for itself. But, like, I love Lady Killer in a Bind as a look at consent within, like, you know, various types of sexual setup. And I also really love the fact that every character in that game that I was flirting with felt like they were queer women written for queer women. And there are very few, like, visual novels or sex games where I go through and feel like the women in those games have been written with queer women as their audience in mind. And I really like that. I really like that I fell head over heels for so many of these stupid characters, and they're wonderful, and I like them, and I have played this game more times than I would care to admit already, so, yeah. This year was a really weak year for strong sex-themed video games. There were a couple that were in contention that did interesting things about, like, when the UK's porn ban on non-traditional sexual activities was announced, there were a couple of short indie games made about, like, basically, like, hey, take this sex item and this sex item and put them together and the game will tell you, is that legally okay in the UK now or not? Because the UK banned, like... The UK banned a bunch of stuff in porn that was things like, hey, you can't sit on a person's face. That's now illegal in porn for some reason. And yeah, there were some interesting games that played on, like, can you legally or not legally do these things in UK porn anymore? But there were very few good sex games this year. I think the only other standout that, like, I was thinking very strongly about, and I need to double check the name on this. I believe it's called Love is Strange. Love is Strange, which was a Life is Strange dating sim. And as someone that was very, very, very into Life is Strange and very much liked my lovely queer drive off into the sunset ending that I chose to have, I was very happy to have something that went back to that world and explored basically like, hey, these characters are definitely queer. Let's have an explicit narrative about them being lovely and queer together. So, like, that was one that was in contention, but ultimately no game this year got me as interested as Lady Killer in a Bind. In spite of its flaws, it's the game that got me thinking the most in terms of sex stuff. So, yeah, cool sex games this year.
Awesome.
You
know, I will probably get hate mail, but I was one of the people that was not really enamored of Life is Strange.
That is totally fair. It is a pretty flawed game.
Well, it was apparently me even agreeing with the fact that it was a flawed game is enough to get me hate. So I just find it interesting. And I don't know if it's me being older, being a person of color, or I should say being a black woman. But also queer, but just the protagonist just never clicked for me.
For me, like, just on a personal level, I found the pair of protagonists really interesting as someone who grew up and was very much the shy, meek person, but wanted to be the outgoing, you know, blue-haired, tattooed person that I've kind of ended up being now. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting watching the two of those archetypes of, like, basically teenage me and me now interacting. I found very interesting. For all of its flaws, I think the second episode of that game does some very, very, very interesting if flawed conversations about some very serious topics. I don't know whether, like, it's a thing to, like, warning, like, talk about suicide for a second, but the conversations about suicide that happen in the second episode are create some very interesting conversations about how you gamify very serious real world events. And just overall, I really fell in love with that pair of characters, and I just wanted them to be happy, and I love that game. It's cheesy, and it's flawed, and there's plot holes, but I love it.
Totally fair, you know, and I don't begrudge someone who loves something, especially when it's so personally meaningful. But as we have found out, you cannot actually dislike a thing without people, you know, saying you are the worst thing on earth, so... I always hesitate to talk about when I dislike something now because of that, which isn't like me, but, you know, some days you just don't have the emotional capital to deal with.
How dare I'm aware of that. I recently gave The Last Guardian a 5 out of 10. I'm aware that sometimes if you say you don't like a thing that people like, it can be unpopular.
Yeah. speaking of popular things, yeah. or not so popular things, depending on where your picks went. David, it's your turn.
Yeah. Yes. We're actually gonna talk about our game of the year picks in a few minutes, but or maybe longer than that. We've got listener questions between here and there. But overall, were you happy with the new releases this year? Did anything stand out as a really new or must play?
This was a weird year in that, as someone who primarily loves a lot of what Nintendo do, it was a very quiet year on that front. There was very little in the way of new Nintendo releases for me. I think the game that definitely had like the biggest impact on my year that's in my Game of the Year picks is Pokemon Go. That hit me at just the right time that I'd just come out of, like, big, pretty major surgery and needed something to motivate me to get up and get walking and get moving. And Pokemon Go was a perfect thing for that. It scratched my itch of obsessive completionism and trying to collect everything within a set data set, and that worked very well for me. Otherwise, like, I've really enjoyed a few VR things this year. Like, I've not put them in my Game of the Year picks, but I found that I really enjoyed stuff like Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, or the demo for Budget Cuts. I also really enjoyed the fact that I got my mum really into VR. Like, my mum asked me to bring around my HTC Vive to hers to show her at some point, and after that, maybe 5 or 6 times, she asked if I could bring it over so she could invite friends around and show her friends. Like, I really enjoyed getting to explore, like, an exciting piece of new tech with someone that's not really into video games but got excited about games because of that tech. So, like, whether VR's going to take off or not, I really enjoyed some VR games this year and, like, the excitement that surrounded some of them. So those are some things that I was big on. Otherwise, like, my Game of the Year picks are really, like, boring and predictable and AAA and well-known this year. I'm very disappointed in myself. There's not enough weird indie stuff on my Game of the Year list this year.
It's fine. We're not going to hold it against you. Mine are all AAA, so I can't talk.
Yeah. I'm such a populist, you know, only liking the games that everyone else likes, so...
How could you, Laura? How could you?
Oh, how dare I?
Well, you know, aside from deciding on best butts and best sex game, you are probably on a lot of podcasts. You know, I was lucky enough to panel with you at GamerX4 about podcasting, and that was a lot of fun. So I was wondering, you know, of the many podcasts you do, would you like to shout any of them out for our audience?
Yeah, there's a few that I'll shout out. So there's one that I've just finished doing the second year of, but it's not a time-sensitive one. Year of Steam is a podcast that I've done every 2 weeks for the last 2 years, where me and two other hosts will go through 2 games every fortnight from our Steam backlog, and just play games that we got in humble bundles or through codes or because they were cheap in sales and that we just didn't get around to playing. And we'll just force ourselves to be like, what is this weird game that we've never heard of that we didn't get around to playing on Steam? And there is 2 years worth of, like, each of us talks about 104 games over our, like, 52 episodes. So if you want to hear about, like, a bunch of games that we never bothered to play on Steam and went and, like, dug out of our backlogs, that's a fun thing. Laura's Gaming Butts, which I vaguely mentioned earlier, it's a show I do on YouTube where basically I will get a guest and we will talk very seriously about butts for like an hour. There is one in particular I'll suggest people check out. If you've played the game Thomas Was Alone, I got the developer Mike Bithell to come and talk about the butts of Thomas Was Alone in very, very serious detail. He tells you a lot of lore about how important the butt design was to the characterization of those characters. So that's one I think is cool. Otherwise, I'm on Podquisition, which is a podcast with Jim Sterling. I have the Let's Play Video Games podcast where we tell terrible dad jokes and sometimes talk about video games. And I think that's the big ones that I'm doing at the moment.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, there's a few others, but that's the big set of them at the moment.
All right then. I do good with one podcast. I am amazed and awed. So,
hooray! Listening to my own voice is my life. Yeah.
I need tips and tricks on that because I still cringe when I hear my voice.
So do I.
All right. So you heard it here. There is no getting over your own voice. Good luck. Yeah.
It'll never happen. You just have to learn to live with it.
I have found that if you increase the speed slightly, you can deal with it because it doesn't sound like it sounds like, you know.
Yeah. You can blame the not sounding on you or on the fact that it sped up, and that certainly, like, you know, that helps.
Yeah. So I just listen to the podcast slightly faster than they are to just deal with that.
Yeah, that's definitely a way to help.
We also wanted to know what do you have coming up? What's next for you?
I don't know right now. This year has been like a very weird year in that I started the year as like UK editor at like a no-name site, and now I'm doing my own thing, and a lot of my year has been based on leaking stuff that hasn't been announced, but that's really tiring, and trying to balance like how fulfilling is that versus how fulfilled am I by doing silly shitpost type content where I just talk about silly stuff like what if Tetris characters had sexualities. I said that really weirdly. Sexualities. I don't know why I said that weird. I'll talk about this a little bit. I had the option to go and have a salaried job with a no-name site starting in January. Turned it down because I basically decided that I didn't want to sacrifice the creativity I have right now. And yeah, I want to do silly, stupid, creative content. I want to do stuff like, I'm trying to think of good examples of stuff I did this year that I'd like to do more stuff in that vein. I had a YouTube series this year called Totally Legit Gaming News, where I would wrap myself in tinfoil and talk about the fake gaming news stories that PR didn't want you to know. I like the idea of doing more silly, scripted content that I can get a bit stupid with, because it takes the edge off of always being really serious and in-depth about video games. So I want to do more silly stuff. I want to do more in-depth stuff. I want to try and find a balance of those that makes me feel good.
That's really cool.
And more butts, obviously. Yeah. More butts, you know, obviously.
All butts, all the time.
All butts all the time, indeed.
I aspire to that. I like that idea.
Oh.
Well, you're really awesome, and I like you.
Yay!
So should we move on to the listener questions? Do you want to get the first one?
Sure. We actually got email. I was excited because people never email us, even when we ask them to. But Darth Radar had a couple questions for you via email. The first was about the Switch. So it's like, have you tried the Switch? And if so, how does it feel? I think this was all one question that I kind of cut up into two. Mm. So they really want to know about the Switch. How does it feel? Is it good in the hands? Is it tiring to look at? And what do you think of the screen, etc.?
I've unfortunately not managed to get my hands on the Switch yet. I suspect the reason why I'm being asked this question is that I have been quite heavily involved in leaking information about the Switch in the last few months, and a lot of that has been proven to be accurate either through the reveal trailer or patents that happened this week. I haven't managed to get my hands on one yet. I've seen images of dev kits, I've talked to people who've had them. I doubt I'm going to get my hands on one until January, and I'm not supposed to be getting my hands on one in January, but it's going to happen. So in January, as soon as I get my hands on one, I'm pretty sure I'm already blacklisted by Nintendo. So if I get my hands on one, I will be telling the world what I think of it. Like, nothing's going to hold me back from that. So when I get my hands on one, you'll all know, but I haven't touched one yet.
Because I actually got rid of my Wii U. I got it. It was a whim purchase when I could go do such things. And then it kind of collected dust.
The Wii U is my favorite console that I never play.
Okay.
I love the console's design. I love the gamepad as a concept. I love being able to sort of play off of the TV. I like being able to use it as my little, like, tablet, internet browser, YouTube video watcher while I'm working. I love a lot of games that released on it. The release has just dried up entirely, and I'm hoping that's because development entirely switched over to making games for the Switch. But the last game I remember really sinking my teeth into, I think this year I played Tokyo Mirage Sessions FE, which is the game that used to be Fire Emblem Cross Shin Megami Tensei. Before that, it was probably Xenoblade Chronicles X that came out, like, this time last year. Those are the last two times that I remember playing, like, big, decent games on the system, and it's a real shame, because I love the Wii U, and I really hope the Switch gets software support, because I like Nintendo hardware, and I really want them to actually, like, there to be games I can play on it.
Oh, we'll see what happens. I'm taking very much a wait-and-see approach, because I don't want to buy something and then have support or titles dry up. And then wind up with another Wii U situation, because I bought it because everybody was like, oh, Splatoon's great and all these other titles. And then it was like, okay, so Tumbleweed, where's the new stuff? You know, I'm not really digging
it. The only thing that's coming to the Wii U still is the new Zelda game, Breath of the Wild. And I doubt many people are going to play that on the Wii U, because it's probably going to come out at the same time on the new console and everyone will want the new version.
True.
Hmm.
And do you want to take our next two questions from our friend Tim?
Sure. Tim tweeted in, Let's Play Video Games broke some of the biggest hardware news of the year. So how bad has the pushback been from Sony and Nintendo, from the companies themselves?
Okay, so Sony's pushback was actually surprisingly non-existent. Considering when, like, places like Eurogamer and Digital Foundry initially put up their unboxings and videos about the PS4 Slim, they took them down citing legal concerns. I put my unboxing and my review up fully expecting to have, like, people in like, black glasses and suits knock on the door to be like, yeah, you need to take this down. I never received any request to take down my coverage. I never, like, had any kind of, you know, contact from them about it, and I still receive review code from Sony. Sony seem to still be happy with me. There's no signs that they have, like, actively pushed back against me because of it, and, like, I even got to meet some Sony staff at Eurogamer, the EGX convention in London. No, not London. Manchester, was it in? Birmingham? Wherever it was in the UK. And they were lovely. They didn't seem to be holding a grudge. Nintendo, on the other hand, I've heard off the record from people that I'm apparently blacklisted now. I have not been receiving invites to press events or review code. I'd be willing to put money on the fact I'm blacklisted, and honestly, I can't blame them, because by talking a bunch about the Switch, I've probably messed up their PR plans a bit, and they have every right to stop playing ball with me because of that, but it sucks. I like Nintendo. I love Nintendo. They are the company that got me into video games. I have a lot of emotional investment in the things they make. And, you know, just because I'm blacklisted doesn't mean I'm not going to get my hands on games before they're released and get to events that I'm not supposed to be at. So it's fine. I'll make it work.
You're industrious. That's what we like about you.
And you seem to have so much energy. I don't know how you do all the things you do.
It's ridiculous amounts of caffeine, honestly. It's just enough caffeine that it should probably be killing a person, and you just kind of, you just pour all of that into excited energy, and then sleep for 12 hours after you're done. It's all good.
let me try that again. So, Tim's second question is, what do video games need to do to top Overwatch's butts, and should they even try?
I think they should try, because if a game can outdo Overwatch in the butt department, then they have earned my respect. Overwatch, it overall is the game that I gave my, like, game with the best overall set of butts award to this year, because Overwatch is a game that not only has a variety of different kinds of butt, but a variety of different relationships between the butts and the characters. There are characters who flaunt their butt for very specific character reasons. Widowmaker being a great example of, like, the entire point of her character's design is to mimic sort of like a Black Widow that's like, hey, come step into my web, and using the webbing on her outfit to be like, haha, the web is the butt. There's a bunch of interesting butt designs there. Enough of them that it's the only game that I've ever done butt review podcasts about twice. I got two separate guests in to talk about the butts twice, because there's so many butts. What they would need to do to outdo Overwatch on butts, you would need to have a larger roster with a greater degree of variety in butt types, as well as also outdoing Overwatch in terms of the level of positivity and comfort that most characters seem to have with their butt. And that is a trio of things that are very difficult to... It'd be very difficult to outdo Overwatch in all three of those regards. I'd like to see people try. I'd like to see games that try and have a huge varied cast of characters with very varied butts that have varying relationships and levels of comfort with their own butt. I'd like to see it. But I'm dubious that anyone will knock Overwatch off that top spot.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Butts.
Well, what's funny, and this is butt related. So have you played Mafia 3, Laura?
I have played Mafia 3, yes.
So one thing that often comes up, because N.K. Jemison and I have played Mafia 3, and I was playing it while hanging out at her place, and the first thing she said was, aside from griping about Lincoln's hair, because in the pre-getting shot in the head scenes, I know he's supposed to be mixed, but come on, y'all, the hair. but she keeps remarking that he has no ass.
Yeah. There are numerous video game characters that just don't have asses.
But he's a black dude.
And it's weird. Yeah, like that's. There's no ass there. I will back that statement up. There is no ass.
Because I'm just like, really, you couldn't give the brother something.
Apparently not. You know, Ubisoft as a company in general, I'm just going to talk about Ubisoft. Ubisoft are really bad at giving their characters butts. The only character with like a noteworthy behind that I can think of is Paige, the pig uncle in Beyond Good and Evil. He's got a relevant ass, but generally Ubisoft has like no good asses. Like Rayman, one of their big mascots, He just doesn't have an ass. He has a torso. There's no ass. I guess that Ubisoft, because they're French, just don't like buttocks.
I'm sorry, I'm just...
No, Mafia wasn't Ubisoft, were they? I'm very tired. I've just realised Mafia was not Ubisoft. Like, I don't know why... I don't know why I went off on... Okay, my rant stands. Ubisoft are really bad at asses, but also Mafia 3 is bad at asses. Sorry, I've been on Skype talking to people for like 5 hours today. My brain's turned to jelly.
It's okay, we're almost done. But Mafia 3 is 2K in Hangar 13.
Yeah, actually, yeah, 2K. Rockstar, they're pretty good at asses.
Yeah.
So why the lack of Mafia asses? I don't know. GTA 5, that are pretty good asses.
So next time I tweeted someone on the Mafia team, be like, so about Lincoln's ass, maybe the DLC you could work on this. And now everyone on the Mafia team is going to unfollow me after they hear this episode.
I'm very tempted to go and try and track them down and ask them this. It would not be the first time I've asked an actual serious game developer about asses. What's the guy that did Broken Age?
That's Double Fine.
Tim Schafer. Tim Schafer, the first time I met him at like a, I think it was at the BAFTAs, I asked him about butts. Because, you know, it's what I do.
Nice. So we're taking a slight departure from our usual kind of end of the episode thing. And, you know, since we're going to talk about Game of the Year, we can even kind of skip what we're playing now unless we really feel the need to. But, you know, our buddies at Spawnomy had asked me, you know, why aren't you doing a Game of the Year episode this time last year? It's like, because we've been on the air for 4 months. We don't know what we're doing yet. But this year, it's been over a year. We're on our 79th episode. So I figured, why not? Let's do Game of the Year. And as our esteemed guest, you get to go first to talk about your Game of the Year picks, Laura.
Okay, well, as I said before, I feel really, like, ashamed of myself that there's no, like, weird niche indie stuff on my list this year. Pokemon Go, I mentioned already, it was pretty instrumental in a time when I was recovering from surgery and needed, like, an excuse to get up, get moving, try and push myself, and as someone that likes collecting specific sets of things, like, I tried doing, like, coin collecting and stamp collecting as a kid, and because there are infinite things to collect, I couldn't deal with that. 150-ish Pokemon, that is a good number for me. I currently have every single Pokemon available in that game, including all of the region exclusives, because I got way too into it. But yeah, I like the magic of being able to be like, hey, wandering around the real world, there's a little bit of magic there now, because there's Pokemon all around you. I really enjoyed Dark Souls 3. It's the first of the From Software games that I really, really got into mechanically that got me to be like, I get how this combat system works. I get what I should be enjoying here. It's the thing that really motivated me to go back and to make sure that I was I properly played through the past ones in the series. And yeah, I really like it. And I'm not usually a fan of like brutally difficult games, but I finally got the hang of it and was like, yeah, this is what I want. I loved Firewatch this year. It was a fairly short experience. It was certainly flawed in some ways, but I really liked a lot of the characterization. I liked the pace at which you got to explore that world and the general being able to explore such a nice environment while going through a very interesting story. That was pretty cool. I've got too many games on this list. I think I've got like a short list of like six. And so I'll try and get through them as quick as I can. Superhot. Fascinating game on a mechanical level. I love the whole idea of a first-person shooter where the world doesn't move unless you're moving. As someone that's not very good at first-person shooter games, it worked really well for me in that it basically felt like an FPS mixed in with a strategy, like a turn-based strategy game. I liked that I could take my time to sort of think about what I was doing, slowly make shots, position myself while I went, and I had time to think about all these things that I don't usually have when doing a first-person shooter. I also really like the layers of meta-narrative that are layered over it. I think it was the most successful game this year in terms of developing a narrative that involved you as the player being part of the narrative. So I really like how it handled that. Final Fantasy XV, it's gay boy band road trip. It's basically like the JRPG equivalent of the movie The Hangover, but with like less of the weird, annoying, like phobic jokes in it. It's basically like, hey, we're going on a road trip before you get married. Oh no, we had to take a very big detour because things went wrong. And I love all of my doofy road trip boyfriends. And lastly, Pokemon Sun and Moon. I really liked a lot of stuff about the switch from one big environment down to a series of smaller, more contained environments that really helped me to feel like completionism and trying to track everything down was a lot more manageable in terms of small tasks. I like the fact that they split it up by island as to what percentage of Pokemon you had, so you knew where you still had lots of things to collect. I was a bit iffy on some of the aspects of what they did with their world, particularly the fact that it's like, hey, these Pokemon are basically sacred to the people on this particular island, but you can catch that Pokemon, and that feels really weird when it's like, oh yeah, you know that deity that you pray to? I own it now. That feels a bit weird, but I like the structure of the smaller set of islands. I like the fact that they took Pokemon that have been around for a long time and feel very stale, like Rattata, for example, and changed them up enough that I got excited about them, but I also recognized them. It's the Pokemon game that got me excited about Pokemon again. So, yeah, that's my games of the year, I suppose.
Cool. Although, I admit for a split second, I was like, Pokemon S&M. Did I miss something?
Oh, Sun and Moon.
I realize that now.
Yeah, no.
I was like, wow, Pokemon really has changed since I last played.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was meant to be in my best sex game discussion. You tie up a Pikachu with some, you know, some restraints. It's a very avant-garde game.
There's some Tumblr posts you get your flog out. I need to show you then. Oh, God.
Well, oh, electricity.
Oh, man.
It gets complicated.
Very.
Oh, God.
While I get myself together, David, why don't you share your Games of the Year picks?
Yeah, it's been like a really tight year financially for me, so I haven't really played any console games or new games for the most part, except for my phone, because I'm on a contract, so I always have like a decent phone. So there's Pokemon Go, obviously, and I still try to remember to like use it when I have to like go to the store or something. I've apparently walked like 50 kilometers with my Haunter.
See, what you needed was to play during that Christmas event where there were Ghastlies everywhere. You could have had your Gengar by now.
I thought it was Halloween.
Halloween, what did Christmas. I say?
You said Christmas.
I'm clearly tired. During that Christmas event...
the Christmas Halloween event.
There is a Christmas event now. You can get a Pikachu with a Christmas hat on, but no, Halloween.
I saw one of those, but it was like a block away, and I just didn't have it in me.
If you get one, you can evolve it into a Raichu with a Christmas hat.
Well, yeah. I hadn't even thought about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's the TMNT Legends game, which did come out in 2016, according to Giant Bomb, and... the company doesn't say. It is so badly documented, I have no idea. But it's like a turn-based, it's sort of like an old turn-based RPG in a lot of ways. And the battles, the strategy to it gets really complex once you're at like 4 stars or above. I was gonna say something about it. Oh, right. It's really, like, the way that they've been trying to, like, monetize it has been, I'm gonna say clumsy.
Huh.
Originally, it just had, like, the overpriced, like, character packs and all of that stuff that is clearly based around that sort of, like, whale philosophy. But they seem to be moving to, like a subscription-based thing. They recently added, you can subscribe to the game for $10 a month, which is $5 more than what I think is fair. And it's interesting to see them like move away from like the whale model to something a little more sustainable. And it's just so weird to watch it in real time.
Huh.
Yeah. Then Starbound, which officially released this year, but I've been playing it for like 2 years. Because it was an early access game. I love how, like, moddable it is. I love to see what people do with games when you let them. And, I didn't write this down, but I'm going to mention it. Tamriel Rebuilt did another update this year because I love mods and what people do. And Morrowind is easy to mod for compared to later games where you have to have friends who are voice actors. So I would recommend people check that out. And I think that's it. I was a little rambly there. I'm sorry.
That's cool. I think that's the kind of day we're all having, it seems.
Yeah.
Just a bit.
Tanya, what are yours?
Unsurprising to anyone, my absolute goatee for this year is Mafia 3. I have praised this game quite a bit, and I admit it gives me a little bit of a thrill when I tweet about the game or talk about the game and some of the devs respond, or the fact that we had a chance to talk to Charles Webb both on this show and then also we had a roundtable discussion at Spawn on Me with Tarek Musa and Dr. Trey Andrea Rustworm about the game and the race politics in it, and it's refreshing and it's vindicative, and you know, normally we don't get the revenge fantasy starring someone who is not the scruffy white dude.
Yeah.
And also, thanks you to you and Jim for talking about it on Podquisition, because I found it very interesting that, you know, you and Jim and a few other people have acknowledged this is a game that, you know, very clearly deals with race, but I, as a white person, don't have the experience to approach it from that angle.
Yeah, like, my thoughts and my discussions on that game in general, I've tried to keep basically down to, I enjoyed that game a lot, the nitty-gritty of it, and a lot of the most interesting things it does are discussions around race. I'm not the person to have those conversations, and it's why I've tried to be like, these are people who are not me, the white person, talking about the game, whose opinions I'm like, that's an interesting thing you wrote. I'm trying to point people that way, just because, like, you know, anything I say about that game is going to be very outsider perspective on it. And it's not that I can't talk about it, but that I feel there are people who would do a better job of talking about that game than I do. So that's why I was pointing people your way, because I think you had more interesting and valuable things to say about it than I ever would have done.
Well, thank you. But it's been interesting, though, because, you know, not to belabor Just Mafia 3 of my list, but there have been a lot of games, a lot of discussion this year about race, where people, even though they do not have that perspective, feel the need to still charge on and speak. And that's been very tiring. In the Ontological Geek piece, I said it, and I don't remember if I named names, but it was Rock, Paper, Shotgun, and whoever it was, because I saw that, and I was like, I rarely get so incandescently full of rage that I just, like, cuss out loud at something, but I did. I swore out loud, sitting here at home, going, the fuck is wrong with you? Because it wasn't enough that you couldn't just acknowledge, hey, I'm a white dude, and this is something that maybe I shouldn't discuss, stay in my lane. But to add the, I'm tired because, and I'm overwhelmed on the N-word because I just mainlined Luke Cage.
Yeah, it's like, that whole discussion of, like, I have had to engage with whatever slur it is in media, therefore I didn't want to engage with it in this other piece of media, feels very odd when you're someone who has to live with a slur routinely used. Mm-hmm. Like, I can empathize with, like, I've made discussions about the use of the transphobic T slur before, and people being like, oh, why are you still going on about it? It's not a big thing. You know, I'm tired of seeing it discussed every time it comes up. I'm like, well, maybe, you know, if you had to live that thing, you'd maybe, you know, not have the option to just be like, I don't want to engage with this piece of media because it uses that thing. Mm-hmm. Those kind of discussions they're fun. They're interesting.
Yeah, and that's yeah. Why I do what I do. But you know, hands down, Mafia 3 is my game of the year. But others on my list are Watch Dogs 2, because I was happily surprised by it. Because I despised and loathed the first game. I took this game back within 24 hours of buying it. That's how much I hated the first Watch Dogs.
The first game is bland white man in baseball cap gets angry and, like, doesn't see that his murder rampage is basically I'm going to do the murder rampage because someone murder rampaged against my family, so I'll kill them. Ugh. I'm angry white man in baseball cap.
Yeah. That was it. And also, it just really fucked up the city I grew up in, so I was doubly angry about that. But Watch Dogs 2 has been a very, very pleasant surprise. I really like Marcus. I wasn't sure if I'd like him. And considering that, you know, it's made with a studio with a bunch of white folks, that, you know, I'm happy with the things they brought up, because they do address microaggressions that black people working in tech that are in San Francisco would deal with, so I was pleasantly surprised, and I definitely would recommend it, unlike the first one. XCOM 2, I'm actually a big turn-based strategy nerd. I barely talk about it, but I love XCOM. I love the first game, so I enjoyed XCOM. It's difficult, it has a high learning curve, but I really enjoy it. Rise of the Tomb Raider is a favorite, considering, you know, I grew up with Lara Croft, and I wasn't super on board with 2013 because of some of the things in the game. And Unravel. I mean, who could play Unravel and not have the heart melt? Adorable little Yarny.
Unravel was adorable, but in places irritating with its gameplay and a bit simplistic in places. I did love it. I love the presentation and stuff. The only reason why Rise of the Tomb Raider is not on my list for this year is I played it when it came out in 2015 on the, what was it, the Xbox One version.
Mm.
So for me, it was in my 2015 Game of the Year list.
Yeah, because it just now came out this year on PS4.
Yeah, because I think the PC version was like January 2016 and the PS4 version was like very recently. So for most people, it was a 2016 game.
Yeah, you know, but I do like it. I like the gameplay. And, you know, for someone who grew up with Lara Croft from day one, it, you know, it's been an interesting progression to see how she's changed over the years. And surprisingly, I have a mobile pick of the year, which is Rain's game. It's a very simple swipe right or left to make decisions. And surprisingly difficult game, but it's a lot of fun.
Oh, I know this one now that you're mentioning it. It's the one where you have to decide, like, who are you going to side yep. with, swipe this way yep. or that way. Yes.
While we're recording this, it's only 99 cents on iOS and Android, and I think it's $3 normally. It's definitely worth the $3. It's fun, and it's surprisingly difficult for a mobile game. So I found it through Mike Laidlaw, actually streamed the desktop version, and it was fun. So I was like, $3, I'll get it. But that is my probably overly long list for Game of the Year picks. If you want, we can briefly talk about what we're playing that is not a Game of the Year pick. Because it looks like some of our Game of the Year and some of our picks are kind of overlapping. But Laura, you can go first.
Yeah, so the only thing I've been like playing recently is I'm on my second playthrough of Final Fantasy XV, which I've stupidly decided to do a full Let's Play of, so every single day, Monday to Sunday, I am playing, like, 30 to 60 minutes of Final Fantasy XV again. I really enjoy that game on a mechanical perspective. There are some serious flaws with its overall storytelling for, like, you know, telling a cohesive narrative about saving the world. But all of the interactions between the cast are wonderful and heartwarming and lovely, and the combat is good, and that's enough for me to very much be enjoying a second full playthrough. It's all stupid little things, like I love the fact that one of your party will very rarely, when you win a battle, sing the Final Fantasy victory theme yes. and just kind of hum it as he goes along. I'm like, oh, you melt my heart, yep. you lovely boy band boys. So I've been playing that, and then in the slash reading slash watching, like, what else thing of this week, I've been really into a show called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which I did not think I would be into, and I was dubious about the title, and then I started watching it and I discovered it's a really interesting, well-written show about mental health issues and relationships that has a fantastic soundtrack of comedy musical numbers. And where I was initially dubious of, like, oh, the core conceit is that it's, you know, we're going to use the word crazy to describe this ex that, you know, goes after her teen love and moves across the country, it ends up having some pretty serious conversations about, like, the dangers of completely, like, going cold turkey on mental health medication, because you suddenly decided, I'm doing well right now, I'm just going to throw it out, and the ramifications of that, and dealing with, like, hey, these are actual, you know, mental health things that need to be dealt with, and character progression comes from that, which is really nice in a relationship comedy musical. Also, there are musical numbers about being bisexual, which, you know, is always a win in my book. And the other thing I've been watching this week was Rogue One, that Star Wars film. Very, very broad strokes, spoiler-free discussion. I thought that film started very, very slow and very poorly paced. It was way too much jumping between exposition points and not enough concrete narrative that I was invested in. It also started very, very grey and took a long time to build its colour up, and I'm sure that was a deliberate decision, but it was concerning initially at the start of that film. The latter arc of that film is superb and fantastic and builds very well into the original Star Wars trilogy and tells a very, very good story that feels like it is actually in a war rather than in the aftermath of a war, and it's not afraid to shy away from that. And I ultimately really like that film in spite of the fact that the beginning of it, I think, is objectively bad.
Yeah, I saw it over the weekend, and I feel a way about it. Also, to keep spoiler-free, I was not impressed. And it's not because I'm not a Star Wars fan, but there were a lot of there were a lot of tropes that played out. There were a lot of things where I was just like, huh, that didn't need to happen, but they did it anyway. All right.
Mm. Like, I don't think it suffers with that issue once it gets into its, like, the arc that happens at the end. That last narrative arc where they go off to do the thing. I think that film pulls itself together, but it doesn't know what it wants to do for its first, like, couple of arcs.
I'll agree with that.
And that's... I think it takes a long time to find its footing, and I'm hoping that on a repeated viewing, knowing where it's building to, that I'll enjoy it more. But I sat in the beginning of that film like, I'm not enjoying this right now. And that's never a good start, even if by the end that didn't matter to me by the end.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I was just kind of like, huh, I could have done something else with that hour and a half. But okay, sure. David, what are you playing that is not on your Game of the Year list?
All right. Oh, by the way, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is the Rachel Bloom show, right?
Yeah, Rachel Bloom, yeah.
Yeah, just making sure. All right.
I believe so, yeah.
I've seen like 4 episodes. From what I can tell, it's really good.
Yeah, I was very impressed that like when the first season ended and had what would normally have been an ending that you would expect you'd have to very much force a second season, they found a very smart way to keep that show going. I was impressed. It makes me chuckle a lot.
I'll have to finish it. Let's see. I've been playing the TMNT Legends game, obviously, but I've also I played a bit of Fallout 4 recently. Last night, I played Fallout 4 for maybe 4 hours, and I built half of a house. And I've also been playing Arcanum, which is your co-host Joe's fault, because he reminded me that it existed. And Arcanum is the gold standard, in my opinion, for player choice. How you get to interact with the world. It is the most open I've seen in any video game.
Huh, I might have to look into that.
You can, if you want to go through the game without fighting anyone, you can, I'm pretty sure you can pull it off.
I'm honestly just impressed that there's a game that wasn't The Division that Joe talked about, so... if it's a game that got Joe to not talk about The Division, I'd better probably check it out.
Yeah. And also, if you want to murder everyone, you can become a wizard and resurrect their ghosts to interrogate them to fix the plot. If you've murdered someone who knows something you need to know.
Huh.
That is a very convenient way to not accidentally kill quest important NPCs, I suppose.
Yeah, but that is just a wide gamut between not fighting and murdering everyone in the world and interrogating their ghosts.
Interesting.
You can also, like, make revolvers with, like, bits of trash you find in rubbish bins. It's great.
Huh. That is intriguing.
It is, of course, like an old isometric, like an old Fallout, you know, RPG, but...
That's fine. Murdered Soul Suspect has a mechanic that's kind of similar, except you are the ghost, and you have to possess people that may have clues about your murder. I need to get back to that, actually.
So yeah, that's what I've been playing most recently. Tanya, what have you been playing?
Of the games that are not on my GOTY list, I too have been playing Boy Band Road Trip Fantasy.
Yay!
I'm really enjoying it, but it's interesting because I was like, oh, it's fun, it's fluffy, you know, I'm gonna go drive a car around and ride chocobos. And then out of nowhere come these conversations that smack you in the face with feels. I was like, why, game, what? What are you doing to me? Where did these feels come from? The conversation with Prompto and Noctis when they're sitting on the hotel roof is what kind of fucked me up that first time.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, that conversation...
Yeah.
...got me right in the heart.
Yeah. But I it also has its flaws. Softcore Cindy, as my friend Chris calls her. And the constant kind of weight shaming that they do with Prompto and the whole, oh, don't, if you eat that, it'll make you fat, really bothers me.
Yeah. I won't disagree with that.
And I hadn't come across it yet. I actually saw Todd Harper tweeting about it. And, you know, slight spoiler, but the game's been out a while. Prompto apparently has a backstory where he was very heavy as a kid. And, you know, clearly...
You see some of that if you watch the, I think it's called Brotherhood, the anime they did.
Mm-hmm.
You see bits about his backstory, and definitely his background is... He was a larger kid, and that seems to be where a lot of the jokes come from. And the impression I get of what they, at least trying to be optimistic and think the best, is that maybe they were going for, this is a case of you, like, their friend did get that weight off, and they sort of gently rib them about it to be like, no, you'd have done very well, you know, just reminding you to keep it up sort of thing. Trying to be as optimistic as I can about it, but it is like, yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, and it's like, well, Ignis, you're the one cooking all the food, so hey, maybe just... But there's no way anybody on that in the group could, like, gain weight. Look at how much shit you do running around riding chocobos.
Yeah, you've got to be eating, like, 10,000 calories a day just to maintain your body weight if you're doing, like, that much fighting and exercise. You'd probably be on, like, a marathon person's, you know, dietary intake. I don't think you're accidentally going to accidentally gain weight with that much going on.
Yeah,
possibly.
It really depends on the person, though. My wife is like a fat acceptance activist, and people's body weight, the biology tends towards equilibrium. Some people are just better off heavier.
True. And, you know, and I am not a small person for anyone who has seen me or a picture of me, but it's just more, this wasn't necessary. And I, you know, again, I know the game was originally made in Japan and all this other stuff, but metabolism and equilibrium aside, the amount of activity the characters are doing, there is no real way that you would, you know, get heavier unless they just stop fighting. If they just rode around in the car for weeks at a time and ate the way that they eat because of Ignis's cooking, then that could happen. But there's just no legitimate way that should be a concern as much activity as they're doing.
That being said, I will acknowledge the fact that I'm talking about size from the position of someone that is very, very, very skinny and that I struggle to put weight on. So, you know, take that context what it's worth when I talk about... You know, when I talk about the context of, like, not putting weight on, it is from the perspective of someone that struggles to put weight on when they probably need to. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. I was like, underweight all through high school.
Yeah, and my weight gain was, you know, adulthood and not working out and also not eating as well as I used to, because I used to be an athlete. Mm. But that is neither here nor there, because these are all pixels. But sadly, we have come to the end of having you here with us, at least for this episode. You know, you can always come back. But...
I will come back anytime I'm invited. This has been lovely, and I'm very sad to have to leave.
Well, I mean, we're going to stop.
Just stay here for the next few hours. No. We're going to keep recording. I'm not going to let you end this podcast. I'm having too much fun.
All right, you heard it here, folks. So this is our end of the year, beginning of the year episode that will stretch for 8 hours.
This is the only episode that's ever been done. No, this is the only episode you're ever doing from now on. This is the forever episode. This is the episode that never ends.
So it's the Hotel California episode.
Yes. Oh, you can invite me onto your podcast anytime you want, but you can never leave.
Oh, dear. Well, in the interim, while you're keeping us here, where can people like reach out to you to let us go on the internet?
If you managed to hear this because, you know, there was a break in the recording and it got out onto the internet, you can find me pretty much everywhere at Laura K. Buzz. That's Laura K. Buzz on Twitter, Laura K. Buzz on YouTube, Laura K. Buzz on Patreon. That's what pays the bills. Otherwise, you can find me at letsplayvideogames.com, where I do all sorts of silly stuff. By the time this goes up, you should be able to find on Let's Play Video Games an article I did about video game character vaginas. So go look at that. That's a fun thing I did.
Awesome. Well, by the time this goes up next week, post-Christmas, pre-New Year's, we will make sure and have a link to this lovely article that you are referencing. But in all seriousness, Laura, thank you. This has been wonderful. You are an absolute delight, both in person and behind the mic.
Well, thank you very much. It's been absolutely lovely to join you. I've been hoping to do this for a while. I'm glad we finally got it done. It's been a delight.
Yes.
It's been great to finally actually speak to you.
Yeah, it's been lovely to speak to you too.
Yes, and I hope to see you in person. If not at a convention, maybe I can finally get over to your side of the pond and come visit, because it would be nice to get back to London and the UK.
Yeah, if we're in the same able to be in the same country, I'll try and say hi.
Yay. And with that, we should let folks know where to find us. David, where are you?
I am most easily found on Twitter as @RedConversation. I have a Patreon at patreon.com/RedConversation. I think the last thing I posted on it was about Morrowind mods, because, again, I really like mods. They're fascinating. And I am an editor by trade. You can find me at davidlreeves.com or email me at work@davidlreeves.com. If you need someone to help you, every story has merit. If you have like a manuscript or a NaNoWriMo project that you have collecting dust.
Cool. And as for me, I'm Cipher of Tear pretty much everywhere online. Or if you see I Need Diverse Games, that is also what I started a couple years ago on the internet. We have a Patreon, the I Need Diverse Games Patreon keeps us on the air. It pays our hosting and pays for our website. So if you could drop even a buck our way per month, that would help, because it can also help us upgrade equipment and keep the podcast going. So that is patreon.com/INEEDDIVGMS. And I too have a Patreon, which literally keeps a roof over my head and makes me able to go do things that I do, like go talk at conventions and not have to worry about keeping the lights on and the cat fed. And that is patreon.com/CipherofTear. And with that, we are done for 2016. We will see you in the new year. Have a wonderful and safe holiday if you celebrate. If not, I hope that your end of the year and beginning of 2017 is peaceful, quiet, and prosperous. We will join our friend Deb Budding for our first episode of 2017. Bye.